So we have a cool episode for you guys today because it's going to be based around music recommendations, but not entirely, because we're going to be talking about our favorite live concert experiences. And we thought it was a fitting time for this just because summer is around the corner and a lot of people are going to different festivals, different concerts, and we've had our fair share of cool experiences. So let us know if you guys have been to any of these concerts by chance, or maybe seeing some of the same artists live. Let us know what your experiences have been, anywhere that you guys want to reach out to us. And if you guys are new here, make sure to follow us on Spotify. Make sure to leave us a generous review if you guys would have the time, and rate us 5 stars if you want.
Absolutely.
Ad said he accepts nothing below 4 stars, right?
I accept nothing below 4 stars?
I think that's what you said in a previous video, yeah.
Yeah, but that's okay. If you guys want to give a quick 3-star,
quick
that's
3 stars
fine.
Acceptable.
No, all jokes aside, though, guys, we appreciate all the support on the new audio podcast. It really means the world to us. And if I'm being honest, just, you know, any sort of review or even you guys just listening means the world. But yeah, I absolutely love concerts. I've been going to concerts since I was probably, I'd say, 7, 8 years old, until my parents were okay, you know, exposing me to different types of substances, because you see some wild shit in concerts, bro. Like,
what was
we'll
your
start
first
there.
One? You remember your first concert ever?
My first concert ever, I'd probably have to ask my dad, but probably Jazz Festival in Montreal.
Fire.
When I was super young.
Something I haven't done yet, is gone to like a full-on like jazz concert. Like, I've seen like live jazz bands in different bars or lounges, but never like a full-blown like jazz fest or anything.
My father
like that.
Used to take me every single year to the jazz festival, and my grandfather was also a massive jazz fan as well, so we would go all together, and we did a bunch of different excursions around Montreal. Like, we used to do that, and we used to go to the car show every single year. Just a bunch of cool shit. And I always liked the jazz festival because it was an easy transition, right? Like, you don't necessarily have to stay in one setting to be able to enjoy live music. You're able to go to different places and enjoy different acts, obviously. And listen, if you had to ask me who I saw live at 6 years old, I wouldn't be able to tell you, but that's probably the earliest memory back that I have of going to a live event that was playing music. But how about you? First concert experience?
First concert ever was AC/DC at 2008.
What an introduction,
bro.
Eh?
That was an introduction, bro. I was like, you're playing with the big dogs right away, bro. Like, everyone around me was fucking smoking joints, getting hammered, and I'm just an 8-year-old kid, like, thinking, what the fuck is that smell around me? You know what I mean? So
it was so intriguing as a kid too, because you never really understood what it was, and like, it was just, it drew you automatically. But take me through that experience. Like, why the fuck would your parents bring you to an AC/DC concert at years old?
My dad was a massive AC/DC fan, and he told my mom that he was gonna buy some tickets, and you know, he would play it in the car all the time. He had this, all the CDs, Highway to Hell and so many other CDs, and we were fans, and then we heard that he was gonna go, and then we're like, you know, can we come? We're little kids. We're like, fuck it, we don't know any better. We've never been to a concert before. So that was the first time, bro. And it was an amazing experience to see them, maybe not in prime form, but at a point where they were still able to perform at the highest level. You know what I mean?
And I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So everything from, you know, Angus Young's fucking guitar solos all the way to them bringing out the big house bell. It was fucking legendary, bro.
That's one thing that
it'll never erase from my memory. You know what I mean? It was really one of those special times.
Where were your seats in the Bell Center?
It's pretty high up, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
I still got I got a really good views. It was like probably like a couple rows below what would be considered the nosebleeds. So it was pretty high up, but I still had a crazy view and a hell of a time. So
let me ask you
something.
Okay, so since like it's the age of like reselling tickets for like ridiculous prices now, like what would be like your max that you would pay for a ticket price?
It depends who I'm seeing, bro. Like, if you put together a fucking lineup of all of my favorite artists ever, then we're talking different than going and see a fucking, I don't know, a J. Cole concert or something. You know what I mean? So it depends what it would be, but what scenario are you putting me in exactly, bro? Be more descriptive with
it. More descriptive. Do I go concert or do I go festival?
Whatever the fuck you want. I mean, I'm more of a concert guy, though. I'll say that up front.
I'm definitely a concert guy. I feel like it's a much different performance. That's one. Two, like, I love the festivals, bro, because of what it does. It brings everyone together. But I'm not going to lie to you, dude. Like, staying on my feet for 13 hours in a day and just even sometimes getting into the festival is such a pain in the ass, bro. And not only that, but the acoustics are always garbage, bro.
Yeah, they're usually bad. And, like, we just experienced this because we went to Metro Festival. Like, you have people paying, let's say, $200 for a day to see their favorite artist who, for a lot of people, it was Lil Wayne, who was headlining on that Friday, and they only got the scene for 15 minutes. So you got to sort of like sit through and watch a lot of artists that you might not care that much about just to have a little window of time to see your favorite artists. Like, how worth it is it really? You know what I mean? Compared to a dedicated concert where
I think it's
you
worth
know what
it.
You're paying for.
Yeah, I think it's worth it in the case that, like, you get a completely different experience where you're a lot more immersed, let's say, into the weekend. Like in the case of Metro, it's worth it because you get to see every artist and like you get to see an inclusion of artists.
If you like those artists, though, absolutely. I think that's what it comes down to.
And the lineup has to make sense for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, hey, let's say something like, I don't know, fuck, who's your favorite rapper? Who could I put into? Okay, let's say J. Cole, Drake, and Kendrick decide to do like a complete tour.
Okay.
Three different, like, all like the big three tour, let's say, you know?
How much would I pay?
Yeah, how much would you pay for that?
Like front row seats?
Front row seats.
I'd be willing to pay, you know what? A good 1,005.
Yeah, really?
I would be willing to pay that much, yeah. To see like three of my favorite artists of all time share the stage, yeah, that would be, especially the big three, bro. Like, that would be one of the most memorable like hip-hop experiences ever. So, yeah.
That's very true.
What about you? What would you pay for that?
Well, give me the scenario.
Same scenario, bro. I'll throw it back to you. The Big Three Tour.
Big Three Tour. Yeah, I'd pay around that 1,005 to 2,000.
Yeah, I'd pay even 2,000 for sure.
But honestly, I'm not that big on like live experiences, to be quite honest with you, all that
really?
Much. It depends what it is, though. Okay. I have to really be down. Like, it has to be a legendary moment. Example, like the Nas and Wu-Tang situation. We have to go see that concert. Like,
we have
that,
to
that's
go
an
there,
absolute
bro.
Must. Where are they playing? They're playing at Place Belle, no?
Playing at Place Belle, I believe, in October. Yeah, we got to get on that,
yeah,
bro.
If you guys are listening to this after that whole like concert goes down, just know that Lou and I tried to go if we did end up going. But I mean, listen, regardless though, I do think that live experiences are super cool. And I think that's where I'm going to start off with my first live experience. I want to go back to 2011. Okay, I think I was 10 years old at the time. Let me check this date out. Okay, April of 2011, I was 10 years old. So I wasn't 11 yet because I'm born in August. And this was for the Rush Time Machine Tour, okay? Mm. And I'll always remember this live experience. One of my favorite moments of all time with my father. And what's cool about Rush is that they were really like the first band that I started like buying into their culture, if that makes sense. Like, you know, when you're a kid, you're listening to certain songs, you're like, oh, I like this, but his name is this, you know? And you don't necessarily put two and two together. With Rush, it was fire because I had, you know, recently watched their documentary. I remember that as a kid. I was invested into Neil Peart's career. I really liked Geddy Lee and his voice and like what he was doing as the kind of like the glue of the band. I loved Alex Lifeson also as a guitarist. And I was like, okay, like I'm buying deeper into the project than just necessarily the material. And I feel like that's an essential part for me when going into a live experience is that like you want to say you were there. You know, if you want to just listen to the music, you could throw it on your phone and just say, okay, you know, I'm listening to the experience. But when you're there and you're in the same room as them and they're playing in front of you, there's a certain type of mystique to that. And that's what I really enjoyed about the Rush Time Machine tour that went down in 2011. They came to Montreal in the month of April. And I remember I was asking my father, like, man, we got to go to this. This was crazy because they came earlier in the 2000s decade. I'm not sure which year. And my father had gone with my uncle and a bunch of different friends. And they said it was absolutely incredible. They would bring out like this huge dragon head that would have like fire spitting out of the nose, like as Neil Peart was like just mashing his drum set. And I wanted to see it. You know, I'm like, what the fuck is this all about? So I ended up going. It was an incredible, incredible set. I think the concert lasted over 2 hours, bro.
That's
like
wild.
Over a 2-hour concert, they did over 35 songs, if I'm not mistaken, because they gave everyone kind of... Well, it's cool. They gave everyone a pamphlet of what they were playing that night.
That's cool. You don't see that anymore.
Like, it was like, that's okay, cool. Then we're going to head into this phase. And then they went into different acts of their performance, which was super cool.
Did you get this beforehand or like upon walking into like the show?
Upon walking into the show, they were going to let you know what they were playing that night. And what was cool too
that
is
built up the anticipation. Guys, you're waiting for them to come on. You're like, oh, fuck, they're playing this. They're playing that.
Absolutely. Cool. And what was cool too is that like Neil Peart is obviously one of the greatest drummers of all time, and he ripped a 30-minute like drum solo, bro, with like his massive piece, right? Like he was known for having like massive drum pieces where he'd have like 36 different pieces with his rotating chair. And if you guys want to go see more about like what he does with that, on the YouTube performances are absolutely incredible. I mean, there's a YouTube video with over 20 million views of Neil Peart doing a drum solo. It's just so mesmerizing.
Is that really truly nonstop, like 30 minutes without
non-stop.
Like
nonstop? Wow, and what's crazy is nuts. That like he's doing like live composition. It's not him just like smashing the drum set. Like there's time changes, let's say, within like his drum solo. There's him bringing like different implements. Like let's say he'll have his cymbal on top of like let's say his drum set, then he's including that now, and he's including different types of drum sets.
Is it freestyled?
I'm not sure. It's obviously rehearsed because, like, I think something that complicated has to be rehearsed, but at the same time, you never know. But listen, rest in peace to Neil Peart, one of the greatest musicians to ever live, in my opinion. Probably the greatest drummer of all time, in my opinion, next to Carl Palmer and, you know, other late and great drummers. But I mean, for the most part, it was such a beautiful experience. And this is going to bring me into my music recommendation, which is actually Moving Pictures by Rush, my favorite album from them. And this was released in 1981, which is pretty crazy. So we're going to be throwing it back a bit. And what people might not know about this album, especially for our Canadian listeners, there's a lot of Canadian heritage within this album. First of all, it was actually recorded in Quebec at Le Studio in Morin Heights, that legendary studio in Morin Heights where you had the likes of Led Zeppelin and Queen and Rush recording all of their studio albums. And if you guys pay attention to the album cover, it's an actual place in Toronto. I believe it's actually the Legislative Building at Queen's Park.
What's the album called?
Moving Pictures by Rush. You're going to see. And there's actually a triple entendre in the album cover. You guys could go look at that further on Wikipedia. I was doing some research on it. But yeah, absolutely incredible. You have classic songs on there like Tom Sawyer and Limelight, which were more of their massive hits over the years. By the way, it's all progressive rock throughout. And then you have more of their rich instrumental type songs like a YYZ, which you're hearing like rich percussions and bassline and acoustic strings. And what's cool too is that Geddy Lee played so many different hats. He was also Rush's bass player and their keyboard player, as well as their vocalist. So what's cool is that in the concert, you see Geddy Lee. He has a super unique voice. And it might not be for all people because he has a very high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that you see him with like his double piece, like bass guitar. And then after that, you see him with his keyboard in front and you see a microphone in front of him. So for certain compositions, you see him playing the guitar, the bass line, and actually singing every single song while Neil Peart's on the drums and Alex Lifeson is on the actual guitar.
That takes talent, bro, to have that like multitask ability while you're performing. Like, not everyone could do that, bro.
He was a multi-instrumentalist. Yeah, he was absolutely incredible. And
cool cover, too. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, this is in Ontario. It's in Queen's Park.
That's
Toronto.
Fire.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a triple entendre. I'll send it to you after within it. So this album is very special to me. My dad used to play it for me all the time on my way to hockey games. And I'm so grateful to have learned about Rush at such an early age, because if you're a nerd about music, like this is your promised land. Like if you're into composition and you're into time changes, you're into storytelling, you're into motion, like this is truly the stuff that's going to move you. And I think that Rush is one of the best progressive rock bands to ever come out of the entire genre, and yeah, I had to bring it into today's episode.
Yeah, it's fire. I mean, I haven't gone through that album in full. Obviously, I know the hits like Tom Sawyer and a couple other ones you were mentioning, but yeah, I'm gonna go into my first concert, and more of mine I would say are more hip-hop centric, just because it's my favorite genre. It's the genre that's always sort of kept me invested into music. So my first one's gonna be Playboi Carti's solo show in 2017. Were you at this one?
I didn't. You and Mass had gone.
No, Nick had came, and I don't know if it was just me, Nick, and John, or I don't know. It was a couple of us that had gone, but this was an exciting time just because we were in high school. It was our last year of high school, and you know, at this time, Magnolia had just popped off, and Carti had released his self-titled, and we were really on that hype train. Like, we were really spending every day just fucking bumping this project, and then we randomly found out that he was coming to the Olympia in Montreal, downtown. Mm. And I'm like, yes, bro, this is going to be a perfect venue, capacity of like 2,500 people. And I'm like, this is the shit that I live for, bro. Like, I love these intimate settings where you don't have fucking 10,000 people in attendance. You're not at an arena, let's say. Like, you're really in this small theater type setting. And that's what it was for Carti. I mean, obviously, at this point, he didn't have the most developed catalog, but that just made it like more interesting as an experience, because we already were thinking about it before going into the concert. Like, how many songs is he going to do more than once? And he ended up doing Magnolia, I think, probably like over 5 times. And every single time that he ended up performing Magnolia, the crowd was more hyped than the last time. And it was just cool because everybody in the crowd was just sort of like free-willing, moshing, sort of just having that room to sort of move around and do whatever they wanted to do. And Carti was as hype as you would see him now at a Rolling Loud set, for example. Like, he always sort of had that energy within him. And yeah, it was just, it was a cool moment. I feel like it's awesome to be able to discover a big artist before they get to that point. And that's what it felt like for me as a kid, is like, wow, I know this guy's going to be a fucking superstar. And I get to see him while the whole world's still sort of not in the loop.
How
you know
is the
what
set
I mean?
List considering that he didn't have too much material out back then?
He pretty much just did all his self-titled, and that brings me to my recommendation. If you guys haven't gone into self-titled, which I'm sure most of you guys already have, but check out some of the low-key songs, because everyone talks about the Woke Up Like This and the Magnolias of the record, but go into the Yeah Means, go into the Let It Goes, which... Let It Go is my favorite Cardi song up to this point in terms of just...
Like the number nines, the half and half.
So yeah, bro.
Definitely
like,
had those
no one really
it.
Like speaks about those joints, and those are some of Cardi's best. And to me, my favorite Cardi song is still Let It Go just because of the lyrical content, him taking you through what it was like for him sort of having to deal with like a parole officer and sort of try to keep this clean image while he's still in the streets doing his thing. So there was a different feeling and sort of youthfulness to Cardi's music at that point that I really appreciated. And as a kid, that was a dream come true, getting to watch that that performance.
That
so.
Must have been absolutely incredible.
It was, bro. That
I'm
was
sad
a fucking
I did,
dream.
I'm sad I wasn't into that as like into Playboi Carti as much as I am now to be able to go to that concert. That must have been like, that's a flex, bro, to be able to say that. Yeah,
it is, because Cardi's shows now, like, it's totally switched up for me. Like, I won't enjoy a Cardi show as much anymore just because I'm not as much into his new sound, and I feel like he's gone into like the screamo bag, and the electric guitar is sort of carrying the whole sound. It's not my favorite, but yeah, that was a memorable one for me.
That must have been absolutely incredible. But yeah, I think what's interesting about the live performance is that you also get to connect with the audience on a different level. So now that we understand also the business a bit better and that we're actually in the music business, like, going on a live tour, bro, does so much for your fan base and your community.
It
just
does.
Because you're giving people the experience of a lifetime, and you get to you get to connect with them on a human level. Like, yes, obviously, like, the playlisting matters and everything like that, but the industry took a major hit by not being able to tour, because you get to be like, you get to go face to face with your audience. Like, that doesn't happen all the time, and to be able to have that magic created in a live setting, in a hometown setting, is absolutely incredible. Like, example, being able to see J. Cole play live in North Carolina at Dreamville Fest, bro, there was people crying, you know, there was like people like literally in tears.
Let's talk about that. Like, do you think that he's a top three performer you've seen?
Yeah, he was incredible. He was insane. He ripped through everything. And like, what's cool is he didn't necessarily hide from not being able to like do everything perfect. You know, like, you saw at certain points, like, maybe he mispronounced something or he mistimed something. But what was cool is that, like, he was live rapping, bro. Like, you saw it on top of all of his instrumentals.
I think,
and
yeah,
you don't see that often.
I think that's what's the most impressive to me about what Cole was doing in North Carolina, was the fact that a lot of rappers, I would say 90% of the rappers that we've seen live, and we've gotten to see a lot over time, going to different festivals and what have you, but when it came to Cole, I mean, he had no backing track whatsoever. Like, this guy was purely raw spitting into the mic for full verses, bro. Like, you go to something like, for example, what's that fucking mega hit? Stick, bro. Like, his flow and cadence, bro, it's super quick on that song, and he fucking nailed that from start to finish. That was a long verse, it was a fast verse, and he got it off perfectly. Not only that, but I even just appreciated how creative Cole was on stage, because he had done something, and this could have been a mistake, but it ended up working out beautifully, where he was actually performing Johnny P's Caddy over the Devil in a New Dress beat.
That was incredible too. Yeah, that was really nice. And like, he does those types of Easter eggs within his concerts. Example, I'm not sure what show this was, where he showed how he flipped the Forbidden Fruit beat and how he made it into Neighbors. And
yeah,
then when his DJ did it live, everyone was like, oh fuck. And like, that was one of the first times people actually caught on to it. So I like that about it as well. Also, there are certain songs that I didn't necessarily appreciate from J. Cole. Example, something like the London that was off of So Much Fun. I didn't really fuck with the song, let's say, until I heard it live at that concert. And then I'm like, oh, I appreciate the value of this song now. And then you're going through the J. Cole verse and you're like, whoa, this is not a basic J. Cole verse. This is really well put together and he's ripping through this. So that's what's cool about that whole moment, was that you got to appreciate it into a different light.
Yeah,
you know?
I think in terms of rappers, he's probably the best rapper I've seen live. I think I can give him that title.
I haven't seen Kendrick Lamar.
I haven't seen Kendrick, though. This summer.
I'm telling you, you're going to be mind blown. You will be mind blown at how good this guy is, bro. Everything. He does everything like live. Like, it's only his instrumentals playing. Like, he's not playing his voice. Like, he's not voicing it over.
Same as J. Cole, then. Yeah.
Same exact thing, but yeah, like, he's a bit better. He's just a tad better because
I'm gonna have to see, bro.
Because the flows and the cadences.
I have Cole on the pedestal now for live performance.
I know, but I'm gonna tell you why. Because the flows and the cadences that Kendrick are attacking are slightly a bit more complex and harder to get off than J. Cole does.
Okay.
And like all those like vocal inflections and all those types of different pronunciations that you might find within a Kendrick Lamar album, he's doing it live for you. But okay, let's talk about more rap stuff. I was talking about progressive rock for my first recommendation. I want to go back to the Magna Carta tour, bro, in 2014. This was an incredible show for me because I got to see a legendary rapper live in my home city of Montreal, Quebec, and this went down on January 24th. And I remember December of 2013, my mother had gotten me tickets for myself, her, one of her friends, and my cousin Christopher, and we all went to the Magna Carta tour. And that's pretty funny. I went to a Jay-Z concert with my mom, but she knew how much I was into his music and like how invested I was getting. And
was she vibing out like during the concert?
Yeah, she liked it because it was such an incredible concert. Like he has such a great like stage performance, bro. Like he has a presence, you know, when Jay-Z is in a building, like you feel that presence. And what's cool too is that like Timbaland was doing all the DJing. Like
that's
it was
cool.
Like
wow.
It was Jay-Z and Timbaland.
Wait, was he with him like the whole tour? Like he was his DJ during that time?
I believe so. I know for the because I was reading some articles going back because I don't remember the entire concert all that much. It was 10 years ago. Like I went back to read a couple of articles that were written in the paper about it, and Timbaland was there doing everything for him, and he was actually doing some like live DJing on the spot where Jay-Z would just let him do it. And what was cool is that at a certain point in the concert, Montreal has very strict rules about this. You have to stop at 11. Like, you can't keep going, or else then the cops come through and they shut the whole entire place down. You get massive fines. So it comes to that, and Jay-Z has, like, I think three or four more songs left. And he's like, okay. He's like, what does $50,000 mean to a motherfucker like me, bro? And, like, it was 11. He's like, fuck this. We're continuing. He's like, we're going for it. And then after that, like, there was people in front of the stage that were getting, like, banned up because they were smoking pot. He's like, he was telling the security guards, he's like, I'm going to take care of all those fines. Like, let people do what they got to do. And it was such a cool moment because he also performed Forever Young, and that was nice too because everyone had their lighters, not their cell phones, their fucking lighters, bro. Mm-hmm. And it was a different time. So
2013, yeah.
Everyone with their lighters up in the sky, and like the whole Bell Center was lit up. It was just an experience and such a different moment for me. But
what was your favorite song you got to see there?
Oh man, You Don't Know. I think he performed You Don't Know. I think Fire. That was crazy because that's like a really raw and hard like rap performance from Jay-Z. But what's interesting about Magna Carta is that I believe it was only, I think he did the tour a bit later. Like, he didn't necessarily do it right after he dropped the album, but...
Well, he dropped the album 2013, so yeah.
It was, like, right around that time, but I saw him in 2024, like, right at the beginning. He started the tour in October, and he ended it in January. We were one of the last days.
Okay, so you saw him in 2014, then.
I saw him in 2014, yeah. I got the tickets in 2013. My mom had gotten them for me.
Gotcha.
Hold on, let's see. Was he in... No, I don't think he was in... No, Timbaland wasn't in the opening thing, bro. Fuck, I just saw it here.
That's we fucked up on. It's not going to the Jay-Z and Kanye tour, bro, when they came here.
Yeah, that must have been crazy,
like,
too.
Seeing them, like, perform, like, New Day, bro, on stage together. Like, Kanye sitting down and just being into that confessional bag. Like, oh, my goodness.
That must have been
incredible.
That would
have been a dream to go to.
So they ended up doing the Bell Center, and there was 11,000 people on both nights because they did two dates for it, which is pretty fucking crazy if you think about it. They grossed $1 million out of that weekend. Incredible. Yeah, it was an experience of a lifetime. If anyone's if you've never seen Jay-Z live, please do so. But that's going to take you on to my next recommendation, which is actually the Magna Carta album. And this is an album that doesn't get much conversation within Jay-Z's catalog. I feel like even American Gangster gets a bit more conversation just because of the concept and it being his return. But this is really like, this is one of like the albums that got me into Jay-Z's career, which is kind of fucking crazy to think about because it's Magna Carta. It's low-key on the lower end of his discography, but there's still a lot of fire to go into it. So, example, if you want to go into songs like, you know, Fuck With Me, You Know I Got It, or even something like Fuck Up the World, there's just so much great stuff on this album. And it's Jay-Z being a lot more in his braggadocious bag. Like, this is probably like Jay-Z and his Kanye element to a certain extent, where it's like, it's really like high luxury, high fashion, like him being on top of like the world, you know? And I'm not a big fan of the songs like Holy Grail on here, which don't necessarily add too much to me, but even songs like Somewhere in America or even something like Oceans, like there's just so much.
Tom Ford's a good song too. Yeah, you have a fair share of really quality Jay-Z cuts. I don't think it is like that upper echelon of Hove. It's not a classic Hove album, but It's one that definitely is underrated, bro.
It is very underrated.
It is underrated. How much of it did he do? Do you remember? Like, did he perform like a good chunk of it?
Actually, because I have the...
I'm just curious, just because like...
I have the set.
When you're an artist
Wikipedia.
Like a fucking Jay-Z, bro, do you really spend a good like one-third of your tour doing the album that just came out, or do you go back to that back catalog of the hits that everyone knows and loves?
Okay, well, this is interesting. He does a mix of both. So he came out to You Don't Know.
Fire.
That's what he started off with. Went out to Crown, onto the next one, Holy Grail, Fuck Me, You Know I Got It, Beach Is Better. Then he brings in 99 Problems, Big Pimpin', Dirt Off Your Shoulder. He did Pound Cake, bro. That was interesting, too. He did his verse on Pound Cake. So
that's crazy.
So I got
what?
To see that live.
That's fire. Did you forget about that one?
I forgot about that one. Public Service Announcement, he did in Paris. He did Click. He did Empire State of Mind. And then after that, he finished off with Young Forever. And then he did 23 songs in total. So he did like a full like two albums worth of songs, which is absolutely incredible. Yeah, he did an encore, by the way. He did an encore with Encore. And then that's like how he's like he transitioned into like what's $50,000 to a motherfucker like me, you know? And then he ended up going on to Encore.
You should have taken a video of that, like had a camcorder or some shit with you.
I'm not thinking about that.
I know. You're a little kid, bro. I know.
Yeah, but and just incredible. Incredible. I cannot like... I want to thank him, low-key, for that concert. It really invested me more into like the hip-hop genre and like gave me so much more insight and just how to feel about the music and like actually get into it.
Where were your
seats
there?
I was in the Reds, bro. I had great seats.
Fire.
I had great seats. I was able to see the entire thing. Like, you're not in like that GA area where like, because back then they didn't have like the open floor. Even at the Bell Center, it's rare that they have the open floor. For Kendrick, when I went on the Damn tour, you had to be seated. So the same thing for this one. But yeah, experience of a lifetime, man.
Yeah, that's awesome, bro. So that's one that I wish I could have gone to. But I'll get into now, probably the more that I think about it, the funnest concert experience that I had. And this was at the Mural Festival here in Montreal back in 2018. And if you guys don't know, in downtown Montreal, we have a Mural Festival that goes down every year, usually in that like June. Yeah, I would say usually it goes down in June. And this one went down the first week of June. And what it is that, you know, the city celebrates murals and other street art and also champions live music. And this week was an interesting one just because they do this thing where they have a couple of artists that come down and perform for the people, and the people don't have to pay anything. The concert's totally fucking free. And I have no idea why, but it was only me and Mass that ended up going. Like, you didn't want to come. I don't think Nick or anyone else was down to reach. And do you remember why you chose to shut it down? Because it was literally Vic Mensa as the opener. Then you had Playboi Carti and Pusha T as like the main headliners of that show.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't want to come. Maybe I was just busy that night.
And what's crazy too is that I got to see these performances literally like 1 or 2 weeks after Die Lit and Daytona came out. So it was like at an all-time like high for me because I had just gone through those albums. I absolutely fucking loved them. And I was like, holy shit, I'm going to get to see these guys live now. And what we ended up doing is that, you know, we're like, fuck it, let's get a good view of this. Let's pay for the VIP access. So we ended up being like positioned on this platform where there was a bar area. And it was kind of like, it was literally in an alley, bro. It's a super wide street alley. And then there was this platform that was sort of overlooking the stage almost. Like really, really probably, I would say, a good 10 to 15 feet away from the stage. So it was super close. We had an amazing view. We were chilling, bro. We were meeting people, having drinks. I even smoked before the show, which is like something I don't really rarely do. So that was awesome. And it was cool just because I got introduced to Vic Mensa, bro. Like when he opened, I had no idea who he was.
Oh, that's cool.
And he was super genuine. Like he knew that he was there and that nobody within that crowd was really there to see him directly. So he ended up playing songs off the Autobiography, which is a great debut album. If you guys haven't heard it up to this point, it's one that never really gets that much discussion. But one song that I had to recommend was Say I Didn't, which is the opener from that album.
Cool.
And he samples a song from the soul singer named Durando, and it's actually the same sample that Harry Fraud used for The Count.
That's
with
cool.
Wiz Khalifa and Currency.
That's cool.
And it's a cool song because it's a tribute song to his hometown of Chicago. Sort of in the same vein as something, you know, that Kanye would do for Homecoming, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And what's beautiful about this song is he's just rapping about how when he was getting into the game, his friends and family were super skeptical about his career choices, and it just sort of serves as this really cool victory lap for him. And as you go later and deeper into the track, you get to see how calculated the writing is and how emotional it is as he's rapping about having to go back home for funerals or just a lot of deep shit. So a rapping performance is amazing, and he fucking nailed the live performance. So that was amazing to see. And then, of course, you get Pusha T that comes on next, and he is just a maestro, bro. Like, he had complete control of the crowd, and it was cool because I had known, like, certain songs. I had memorized a couple of songs, and at one point when he was performing The Games We Play, which is one of my favorite songs from him, it seemed like we had locked eyes. Like, he was definitely looking in my general direction, and I was rapping the lyrics side by side with him. And just to have that close connection with the artist and have a sort of vibe where you guys are rapping along with each other, that was totally fucking unmatched. So that was really cool. And then he did classics, by the way. And if you guys don't know songs like New God Flow with Kanye West.
Yeah, incredible.
That's one of Ye's best ever performances, in my opinion. Like, the different flows and cadences that he brings into that track, even the Ghostface Killah sample that's introduced there, fucking unreal. And Kanye's just rapping over different productions. He has also just this energy as if he's rapping like his life depends on it. One of his best ever rapping performances. But you also got Pusha T doing songs like MFTR off the King Push album.
That's cool.
So a lot of deep cuts that you wouldn't really get that often from Pusha T.
But do you think it's because he knew that it was maybe like not as big of a venue and that it was more low-key?
Bro, the crowd was into him. Like, I remember, like, there was a Spanish guy next to me that I'd gotten to know, and even though the album had only been out for like 2 weeks at this point, he knew literally every word to every Pusha T song that was being performed. And I was like,
and it's
holy
not even in his
fuck.
Language. That's crazy.
Yeah, bro. It's not even, well, yeah, the guy was like English speaking, but like Spanish background or whatever.
Okay.
But it was just super impressive to me that you had those diehard Pusha T fans that, you know, showed out for that performance. So that was really cool. And then the night ended up ending off with Playboi Carti, and I have no idea like how much they had to pay him to be there. And it blew my mind that it was all for free, because this was like Playboi Carti at nearing a superstar level. And this was sort of a different Playboi Carti. Like, he was still as confident as ever, but he wasn't really in that like sort of dark goth mode. So he had like his white sunglasses on. He had a shirt on that like said Carti on it. And he was jumping around the stage, bro, just playing hit after hit. And again, another artist who really knew how to take care of the crowd, because he would be chanting like, open that shit up, mosh pit, mosh pit. And people were listening, bro. Like, people were getting into serious moshes.
Yeah, and there's some serious stuff that goes down. Like, especially back then, I remember, like, this is before the Astroworld incident, right? Where, like, a lot of artists were, like, encouraging
it heavily,
like,
bro.
You guys better fuck each other up, like, when I play this song. And, nah, you can't say that, bro. Like, you really can't. Like, even for, like, the Rolling Loud, let's say, performances, like, yeah, the Travis stuff was super hype. I mean, even for Carti, but, like, you have the owner of Rolling Loud coming out and saying, guys, like, you got to calm down. Like, this could end up really bad. And, you know, it's just that, like, you never want to see anyone hurt, you know, in those types of situations.
Never. Absolutely not. And honestly, like, everyone seemed to be able to, like, carry themselves, lift each other up. Like, it was... it was a really wholesome vibe with the whole crowd. So,
but that's when
cool
it's like a
see.
Perfect vibe is when, yes, there's that sort of chaotic energy, but it's controlled by the artist, and when everyone has self-respect for each other, and when people are not trying to like deliberately, you know, kill each other. You know, like that's really when it gets, when it's a nice vibe. Like, I feel like that's a really good
part.
Yeah,
so we had an amazing view of the performances, and we even got to meet Carti at a chance before his performance, and that was a crazy experience just because of how sort of laid back and chill he was as a person. So that was cool. Got to take a selfie with him at a point where I was a huge fan of his, and I obviously still am. But yeah, that was probably my favorite concert experience that I've experienced.
Well, that's incredible. Do you remember the JID concert in 2018?
Yeah,
that
was another one.
2019?
That was 2018. That was for the DiCaprio tour. Yeah, we had bought the meet and greet for JID,
and that's straight off of, you know what, okay, because I obviously enjoyed the JID performance, and we were sitting a bit more on top, right?
Yeah.
And I remember it was so funny, we were trying to find a way to interview him. We had we just opened up the podcast at that point, and like I was just so eager, bro. I was like, fuck, if there's any way I could get into contact with him or whatever it is. And I mean, what's funny is that
this is the first time you say this story
for what
like to our audience, I'm saying, like, is this the first time you ever see the whole business card thing?
Oh, no, I don't think it is.
No, you've said it before? Maybe actually, on a live stream.
I've told Jid's manager about this.
I know.
I've spoken with Zeke, and I've showed him the picture of me and JID at the meet and greet. But this was so funny because, I was such an asshole. We were waiting in line, right? And like the meet and greet was kind of organized in a way where it was like in the equipment section, like garage sort of thing.
Yeah.
In back, where was it? MTELUS?
No, it was at a theater. It might have been the Corona Theater or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, one of those smaller venues in Montreal. And man, I was so fresh, bro, because I just printed business cards for us straight off of Canva. And it was when we were going with the whole moniker, the hottest podcast in the North.
Yeah,
that's fire branding.
It was sick.
That's crazy.
That was in the back of the card, I think.
Yeah, the
right?
hottest podcast yeah. in the North. And then after that, we have like all of our social and shit. And I'm like, this is my chance. We could land GID for an interview. And like, you're so happy, right? Because this is like your favorite artist at the time. You're like, man, I'd love to collaborate with him. And I go up to him. The first thing I say is like, shoot or shoot, bro, my bad. And I shoot him my card. I'm like, if ever you need anything, you give me a call. Looked at me, he's like, man, I respect that so much. And he dabbed me up and was super chill about it. Probably ended up using it as like tips to like roll a joint after, like, you know, when you're out of like filters to be able to roll your J's, you rip up a business card. Probably use it as that. But I don't know, man, it was just such a wholesome moment because we also got to see Sab alive for the first time, and he was just fresh off of Care For Me. Like, it was literally like that, I think, that month, bro. And he was still super underground. Like, people didn't know about
Yeah, he was pretty underground.
People didn't know about Saba like that. And there was also King Mez there as well. King Mez had a fantastic performance. So that was super cool. But going on to one of my favorite, concert experience, I want to talk about Flatbush Zombies in 2018, I believe, actually. Let me see. Was this in 2018 or 2019? But this was for their Vacation in Hell tour, and this was one of the craziest concerts I have ever been
to. Was
this
also a theater setting? Yeah, I would assume.
Was
right?
it at MTELUS or Corona? I think it was at MTELUS, actually.
Really?
It was at MTELUS, bro. Hold on. Let me see. Flatbush Zombies. Hold on. Tour in history. Let's see.
So you just write Flatbush Zombies Montreal 2018, and you'll get what you need.
They did it in Vegas. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, I'll look it up for you.
See what date they came into.
Was it with Kirk Knight?
Kirk Knight,
yeah,
it was
at a theater, Olympia.
It was at Olympia Theater, okay.
17th of May 2018.
Yeah, what a crazy experience. I remember my cousin and Frank ended up getting meet and greet passes because they
were
super big.
Oh, really? They got those? Shit.
Yeah, they got nice. Those. And what was interesting is that like Michi Juice and Eric all had like different roles to play into the set. So they played Vacation in Hell. And obviously, if you guys are not familiar with that album, please go through that. I'm actually, you know what? After I speak about this, I'll go through the track listing for you. But what was cool about this is that if you know Flatbush Zombies, they have one of the like most diehard fan bases you'll ever meet. Like people that are willing to ride or die for them, like really a cult fan base to its truest form. And the crowd control was one of the best I've ever seen. And I've seen Travis Scott live. I've seen Kendrick Lamar. I've seen the biggest of the biggest. And they're up there with like crowd control and the amount of hype and passion there is in a crowd. And what was interesting is that they did this, and I never saw this before at a live concert for a rapper, but they were playing with their DJ, and Eric was doing a bit of DJing as well, and they would freestyle and do cyphers live in front of their crowd, but they would each do it separately.
That's cool.
And yeah. The way that they actually popped off on the stage is that there was like graveyards set up on like the actual stage, and they would all burst out from underneath the stage out of the graveyards and start rapping, and they came out to Vacation in Hell, and it was just a really cool experience. I had a nice time there, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure that was crazy. There must have been a lot of people on shrooms and just like tripping the
people
fuck out in that crowd.
And like, was I smoking pot at that time? I don't even think I smoked pot, bro. Like, I was like the only sober dude in that crowd, and I was just like this. I was just looking around. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? This is just so crazy. But there was one song that I was really, really, really down to hear live, and it was Miss Bison. One of their more like low-key songs that people might not be familiar with. Track number 4 on Vacation in Hell. That was incredible. Even Headstone was fire. Big Shrimp. Leather Symphony was fire live too. Obviously, they played Palm Trees. That's off of Better Off Dead. So if you guys want to go check out all of their music, please do so, guys. Flatbush Zombies is absolutely incredible.
That's fire. See, I'm going to come in with one more recommendation and tour story. So this was actually in 2010 for the Black Eyed Peas, The End Tour.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, so they had put out The End album, I think, in 2009, and then in 2010, they had dropped their deluxe, which was called The Beginning. And this was an interesting time for the Black Eyed Peas because, you know, when you look back at their roots, they were more like hip hop centric, and then as time had gone on, they'd gone into their pop bag. And I had really gotten into them when they had these major hits off of an album like The End, with songs like Boom Boom Pow and Meet Me Halfway and I Got a Feeling. So I was a huge fan. My mom was a fan. So I think we went, me, my mom, my two cousins and my aunt. And
oh, that's a cool time.
Yeah, it was a cool little family, a little family concert. And it was interesting just because I was really immersed into their sound, bro. Like, it was like straight up auto-tune and just super catchy hooks. And at that time, bro, like, I wasn't too invested into hip-hop, and I was sort of more of a rookie music listener, and I would fall for all the traps of, like, you know, pop music trends and whatever else. But looking back at it now, do I love an album like The End? No, but there is a lot of quality on it. And one song that's actually amazing off of it is called One Tribe. And this is more of like a pop funk tune. And it's a really cool story because the message of the song is about unity. And I think that when you think about the Black Eyed Peas, you think about like bubblegum music and just shit that's going to fill in slots in the radio. But they do have their deeper songs, and production on that one's also amazing. And thinking back about that tour, it was at the Bell Center. It was a huge amount of people. I think it was sold out, actually, to be honest with you. And the light show was fucking amazing. And I was just a happy little kid, bro, singing along to, you know, some pop hits that are standard. You know what I mean? Songs that everybody knew.
Did they play Meet Me Halfway?
Of course they did, yeah.
Meet Me Halfway.
They even played a Dirty Bit, which was...
Oh, that's fire. That's a crazy song. Yeah. Remember, you're 10 years old, you're getting hyped at a pool party, bro, and Dirty
Absolutely,
Bit comes on.
Absolutely, bro.
Oh, good times, man.
That was
simpler
a vibe.
Time,
so, yeah,
bro.
That's my last recommendation. Also, shout out to the Taboo tour that I went to with Denzel. That was another crazy experience just because I was literally front row, and I saw this guy, like, he was sweating, bro. Like, he gave his all for that performance, and I'll never forget that too. And even played like some unreleased songs, some more like political type of hip hop music. And those never saw the light of day, but they were fucking amazing.
Yeah, guys. So listen, that's going to wrap up our audio podcast for today. If you guys did enjoy this, please rate this a 5-star rating. Honestly, one of my favorite audio podcasts that we've probably done in a long time.
Yeah, this is fun, but we got to get in our storytelling
nice
bag. So.
Yeah, absolutely. One more little one before we leave. This is not going to be a recommendation, but please, guys, try and watch a Deadmau5 set, you know, before he stops maybe touring or stops performing. That was crazy. And I think the biggest flex I have is to say that I saw Avicii live at the Bell Center, bro.
That's a huge flex, bro.
I got to see one of the most legendary DJs to ever exist live, and I saw a full set of his. So, guys, as I said before, thank you so much for coming through. I really appreciate you guys, and we'll catch you in the next audio episode. Peace.